This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 78. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. And I'm your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who is enjoying a nice pepperoni pizza right now. And I am Jacob Paulson.
And Jacob is not enjoying one right now, but he regularly orders pizza with no intention of sharing it with anyone.
Did yesterday.
And I suspect that might have something to do with the fact that a lot of the rest of your household won't eat some of the things that you will eat. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean,
your kids will eat.
Yeah, they would get it down. But I order it when they're at school.
Yeah. Good call. Today was a frozen one for me. It was all right.
Yeah. No stuff crust, but.
Today's topic, by the way, folks, seasonally and holiday appropriate, Santa behind bars giving guns as gifts. It's a popular time right now to go out there and buy guns for a special loved one or a special somebody. And is that even legal under the law? We're going to dive into that today. But first, we'd like to point out that this day in history, in 2012, is probably a day we'd rather not remember. But on December 14th, 2012, the Newtown, Connecticut shooting took place, where we know that a bunch of little ones that shouldn't have had to, you know, go through this lost their lives, including some teachers as well. So hearts and prayers and everything goes out to those and those families that are still impacted by this today. But also on a, also kind of a sad note too, especially for someone like Jacob, who is an absolute, you know, history buff in this regard and a big fan. I would say you're probably a super fan of this man. And in 1799, George Washington passed away on December 14th as well.
Yeah, I qualify. I'm definitely a super fan.
I would like to think of myself as a super fan, but I probably don't know as much as you do, so I don't qualify. But anyway, interestingly enough, George Washington died of acute laryngitis. Which, you know, it's funny because, you know, people get laryngitis all the time nowadays, right? You know?
Right, like,
I have laryngitis. Get some drugs and, you know, you're back on the mend. And that is what took the life of our nation's first president at the ripe young age of 67 years old. So, anyway, great man. Today's episode, by the way, is sponsored and brought to you by the MTM 13-inch handgun case. And we'll give you a little more info on that later on in the episode. But without wasting any more time here at all today, Jacob, let's talk about today's topic, giving guns as gifts. Yeah, and this
good
is
stuff.
You actually brought this up, and I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Like, we have to talk about that because I know right now someone could very well be listening to the podcast and they're at the gun store or on their way to the gun store thinking about buying a gun for, you know, their significant other or maybe even some cases a child, you know, of appropriate age or whatever. And so, you know, I remember this question came up to me a number of years ago. Is that even, you know, allowed? Isn't that like what's considered a straw purchase and stuff like that? And, you know, I have to admit that a number of years ago, I was like, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. What's the difference between a straw purchase and giving a gift? I don't know. But we're going to get into that today. And Jacob, why don't you touch on it a little bit and explain, you know, your thoughts behind this and why you felt like it was a must talk about today?
Yeah, you know, giving guns is a great idea. You know, guns are great gifts. And when you give someone a gun, I think you're saying a lot of things. I think you're saying, I care about you enough to invest in you. I really care about your safety, about your protection, or, you know, depending on the gun, about your enjoyment of the shooting sports or things like that. So I just think guns are great gifts. So, you know, there's obviously are some concerns, some things to consider. Not even just with the purchase, but even with, you know, shipping guns. You know, maybe you're buying it for somebody who's not, you know, where you live, and you got to ship it to them. You know, what about minors? You know, if I'm buying a gun for a younger person, you know, are there considerations there I need to be aware of? So there are a lot of pieces and parts of this puzzle that just inevitably always come up.
Yeah. Yeah. Good points there. I mean, like you brought into it, the shipping thing, you know, and, that's definitely, an area of concern for a lot of people. You know, how do you ship a gun? How do you get, you know, and I've purchased guns online. I know you have as well. And, you know, that involves some shipping and stuff. So there is some procedures that need to be followed and ways that it's done. We'll touch on that a little bit as well. But let's dive right in here and let's clear some things up, you know, right off the bat, at least a few things here. And let's actually start with defining what a straw purchase is, because that's, you know, that it, this is something that where people can also, if they're not careful, get themselves in trouble with. In fact, I had a friend a number of years ago, and he was just kind of getting into, you know, the whole gun thing. He was not really much of a shooter before. He actually came and took a class from me, and but he's just a total newbie, you know. And he would call me every once in a while and, hey, Riley, you know, like I'm thinking about, you know, buying this or buying that. You know, he'd ask questions about, you know, different sizes of guns, capacity, calibers. And we'd have, you know, some good discussions about it. And he was just really kind of struggling deciding exactly which gun to go with. And I remember one day he made a comment to me. He's like, you know what? He's like, can I just give you like $500 and you just go buy me the best gun? And I was like, no. I'm like, I'm sorry.
It doesn't work that way.
You got to go and buy it yourself. And yeah, that's exactly what this is. What that would be is a straw purchase.
Yeah, I tried accidentally, like as a complete innocent moron kid, to get my brother to straw purchase for me. I remember I was, I must've been 18 or something and, 18 or 19. Yeah, definitely. And, I wanted a certain handgun. And so I was at a pawn shop. I'd been to it a couple of times. I'd kind of looked at it, picked it out and said, yeah, that's the one I want. And, I asked my brother to go with me to look at it just to see, you know, if he thought it was a good gun. And so we show up and I was like, yeah, what do you think? He looks, he's like, no, I think it's good. And I'm like, sweet. Yeah, I want to buy this. And so the guy whips out the form and he's like, now you're 21, right? And I was like, no. He's like, well, you can't buy a handgun. And so I turned to my brother. I'm like, well, how about you buy this for me? And the guy's like, whoa.
Book closed. goodbye. Have a nice day.
Yeah. And I had no idea. I was like, oh, what? What's the big deal? You know? So I was just some young punk, stupid kid, you know, and there I was trying to commit a felony and get my brother to help me.
How old is your brother at the time? I'm curious.
Oh, he's 8 years older than me. So,
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. It's really kind of that's a funny story, actually. I remember, you know, talking about confessions, let's just say, as a teenager, I looked quite a bit older than my age. I was able to grow, you know, a decent patch of facial hair. I just looked older than my age for sure by a number of years. And I was getting into black powder shooting. And, you know, in a lot of states, like you're not even supposed to be able to purchase gunpowder and stuff, you know, unless you're 18 plus. And here I was 16 years old and I go in and I'm like, I'm just going to buy some gunpowder. And I grab like 2 or 3 pounds and I put it on the counter and they totally just no ID, anything, you know, no questions. I just sold it to me right across the counter and I walk out. And it wasn't until like later I got home. My mom's like, how did you buy that stuff? I'm like, oh, I just went in and bought it. Did you know that's illegal? I'm sure the statute of limitations has passed on that one, right?
I'm hoping so.
But you know, yeah, you're young and you don't know what you don't know. But I won't say what store it was that sold that to me either.
That's right. Protect all the innocent. Yeah.
So but a straw purchase is defined as anytime that you are specifically buying a gun for somebody else, like on their behalf. So, you know, if someone's not available, they're not able to, they're not qualified, that's a big, big, big no-no. And that's a lot of times where straw purchases might come into play because someone realizes they can't pass a background check or, you know, whatever. And so, you know, and this happened with the whole Evan Ebel situation. You remember this a couple years ago, Jacob, where you know, he was the one that shot and killed the Domino's pizza delivery driver, dumped his body somewhere, stole his car with the Domino's sign on top, stole his uniform and the pizza bag and all that, right? And then drove to the Department of Corrections chief here in Colorado, who lived in, you know, south of the metro area a little ways, but he drove down there, pretended to be a pizza delivery driver that was lost so that he could get him to open the door, and shot him dead right there in his doorstep. And the gun that, you know, and he was just recently released from prison. And the gun that was used in that case was purchased and provided by a friend of his. And she's in jail now too for several years because she had done just this very thing. She had done a straw purchase.
Yep. The question on the ATF form, it's the ATF form for, I always forget the number, 4773, is that right?
Yeah, 4473.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. So the question on that is, and I'm reading off of the form here, are you the actual transferee slash buyer of the firearm listed on this form?
Yeah.
And then there's a warning. Yeah.
If you answer no on that question, that dealer is not proceeding with the transaction.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, it says right in here, it says, if you are not the actual buyer, the dealer cannot transfer the firearm to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that is a... and let me tell you another interesting story that I think kind of clears this up to some extent, and also gives a particular gun dealer, I'm still not going to mention the name, but gives them a lot of credit, because a number of years ago, my wife wanted to really surprise me for Christmas. And she knew, you know, one way that she could really just like wow me was to buy me a gun. And, you know, this was years ago and we were not, you know, terribly well off. Finances were a little bit tighter. And so she wasn't looking at spending a lot of money. And she goes in and she goes into the store and she's like, I'd like to buy a gun for my husband for Christmas. And, you know, you would think that the gun dealer would be like, whoa, 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 you can't do that. But actually, this gun dealer was savvy enough. I mean, he understood, oh, you're buying a gift. And kind of helped her with that process. And what he explained to her, because she was reading the form, right? She didn't know any better. She's just going through with the purchase, right? And filling out the form, and she gets to that question. And she's like, well... she looks at the dealer and, well, I'm buying this for my husband as a gift. And he looked at her, he said, who's buying the gun today? And she's like, I am. He's like, well, there you go. He's like, what you do after that, it's up to you, you know? And, you know, so I was really excited too when I opened up my Christmas gift and saw, you know, she'd bought me a rifle and, and then, you know, kind of some of the details on that came out. And she's like, I didn't know, you know, some of this stuff and never done anything like it before. And I told her how proud I was to go and, you know, buy a gun. And nice. So, you know, there's definitely dealers, though, out there that as soon as you say anything, you know, like that, you know, they would just be like, whoa, no, sorry. You know, we're not doing business with you. But, you know, this dealer understood that, I mean, yes, the law, the ATF doesn't say you can't gift a gun. Now, your state and local laws might have additional rules or restrictions, but, you know, the Gun Control Act actually specifies that, you know, if you're doing a private party, you know, person-to-person transfer within state, and correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong, Jacob, there's no, you know, requirement that you do any sort of documentation or anything like that on that transaction. Now, your state might require otherwise, but and also too, we should know and to the best of our ability, not transfer a gun to somebody else that, you know, where we have knowledge of them being ineligible of possessing or owning that gun. They've committed certain crimes or, you know, they have problems with drug use or, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's nothing that would prohibit my wife from gifting me a gun is my point, you know, within the law.
Correct. Yeah. That's a pretty good summary, but I'll re-sum it up anyway, because I can't help myself.
Yep.
So yeah, essentially the federal law says that A dealer, when selling a gun, has to conduct a background check. And part of that background check is you have to fill out this form. And that form says you have to say that you are the actual assignee of the gun, that you're buying it and you're taking possession of it. You're not buying it on behalf of another individual. So a straw purchase is I'm buying it on behalf of another individual. They sent me here to get it for them, basically. That's illegal. But yes, to your point, there's nothing in the federal law that says that I can't buy a gun and then choose now or later to gift it or sell it to someone else. Now, and you pointed this out, and I'm going to take it just a step further, that's the federal law, right? That's universally true everywhere. However, the individual states or counties or even cities could have their own regulation, right, on top of that, that does regulate these kinds of things. There's several things that could be regulated here that are relevant. One is what you already kind of addressed, and that is that the transfer from you, the buyer, to the person receiving it as a gift or the person buying it from you, there's really no difference between whether it's a gift or if it's a sale, that transfer might require a background check depending on the state. And currently, at the point of recording this, those states would be Washington, Oregon, California, Colorado, Illinois, New York, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Delaware, and Washington, D.C. These are states that anytime Hawaii. These are states that anytime a firearm is transferred from one person to another individual, the recipient needs to get a background check regardless of the firearm. Now, in addition to those states, Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and North Carolina also have that requirement for handguns, not rifles, but for handguns. So in those cases, if I'm in one of these states I've just mentioned, and I'm giving or selling a gun to another individual, then a background check needs to take place. Now, in some of these states, there could be exceptions for family members. So if I'm buying it for my wife or my son or my daughter, my dad, my brother, my grandpa, my grandson, granddaughter, depending on the specific state, depending on the specific law, maybe that don't require a background check because, they're family or a certain relative. But for the most place, in most states, all the other ones I didn't mention, there is no specific background check regulation. Now, that's background checks, and we've talked about that on the podcast before. But in addition to background checks, there could be some other things you might want to check on. Things like, believe it or not, registration, California, New York City, licensing, carry permits. These are other things that might be required in order for that person to receive or be the transferee, the recipient of a firearm, whether it's a gift or a sale. So yeah, there you just want to kind of double check local laws. And frankly, the dealer should know. Like these people who are in the business of selling guns, you should be able to walk and say, now it's my intent to purchase this today and later gift it to somebody, what do I need to know here in our state? And they should be able to tell you. They should be able to walk you through that.
Yeah. You got that right. And so I was thinking, you mentioned all these different states and some of the laws and how they apply or where they apply. Some states only require it for handguns, some for all guns. One type of gun that is in most jurisdictions kind of exempt from a lot of the same transfer requirements or background checks and things is curio and relics.
Antiques.
So old, antique weapons, which are anything, let's see, made before 1899 or something like that? Or do I have that right?
I think, I mean, I know in Colorado we have a statute that specifically defines how Colorado defines an antique. And so that might vary a little bit from place to place.
Yep. And you mentioned Colorado too in that list of, Colorado is a state now. And I think, frankly, unfortunately, because I believe it's not terribly an enforceable law, but in Colorado, all firearm transfers between private parties have to still go through a background check. So all transfers, period, require a background check. Exceptions are curios and relics or antiques. And then also, you kind of brought this into there a little bit. And so you want to check your own state and local laws because you might very well have a similar exception, even if in general your state requires so-called universal background checks. But like here in Colorado, a gift between immediate family members, which they go into greater detail and define as spouses, parents, children, siblings, grandparents, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, first cousins, aunts, and uncles. That's actually quite generous, as far as
pretty extensive.
Basically anybody within like one generation. Oh, grandparents and grandchildren would be two generations. But for the most part, you know, your aunts and uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews. I mean, that's what I think of my, you know, kind of greater family. And in Colorado, at least, we could do firearm transfers between us without having to do all the paperwork and background check and so forth. So for you Colorado folks, there you go. Just, you know, for the holiday purposes, you're buying a gun, you're going to gift it to any one of those members of your family. You don't have to worry about the requirement for background checks and so forth. Anyway, back to not just Colorado stuff. I did mention like antiques. You can go in generally in most places of the country, you can just pick up an antique just about anywhere, not have to do, you know, paperwork and just buy it and away you go. You know, but a lot of those antiques are going to be black powder, you know, based cartridges or muzzleloader, which is still black powder based, you know, weapons and so forth. So, you know, there's just not a lot of those out there necessarily. So,
and I'll include in our show notes a link to our kind of comprehensive article about background checks. And I think you'll find everything you didn't know in there about where and when and how and legislation related to that.
Yeah. And also we'll make sure that in the show notes is a link to our article that actually talks about this very topic about gifting, you know, firearms and so forth. Now here's another thing. So we've kind of touched on in general, you know, firearm transfers, background checks, straw purchases. I think we've outlined pretty clearly what the exceptions are and what is allowed, not allowed. But what about, you know, I think we're approaching that with the context of, well, I'm an adult and I buy this gun and I gift it to another adult, like my spouse or brother or sister or something. But what about gifting firearms to a minor? And you hear people talk about this all the time. You know, I see Facebook friends, you know, post a picture of a little, you know, 223 rifle or something. And, hey, look what I bought for my son today. You know, and that son is, you know, 12 or 14 or, you know. That, you know what I mean? So, like, what about gifting firearms to a minor? Is that allowed? Because I kind of get this feeling that a lot of people kind of think, you know, that it's appropriate and acceptable to do. And in some cases, it may be. And in many cases, it might not necessarily be. And then also, there's just kind of this whole fine line, too, of at what point do we actually consider a transfer having taken place? Because I might very well buy a gun for my son and say, this is your gun, but it's not actually your gun. You know, I'm still going to hold on to that.
By the law, yeah.
but let's just spend a moment. And I know you did a little bit of research ahead of time, kind of looking at some of the nuances in states and their requirements as it, you know, relates to possession of a firearm by minors.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's two different things here. One is, you know, ownership of a gun. And, you know, can my minor own a gun? And the other thing we're talking about is just outright possession. So relative to, you know, I think we already covered background checks. I think you're right. We can bury that hatchet and move on, you know, relative to the idea of them being an owner. But I think the more kind of focused point here is just outright possession. You know, if I buy a gun and I'm going to give it to my son or my daughter, can they even be in possession of it? I mean, it might be just completely illegal for them to even be touching it, you know? And there's obviously going to be some differences in states between handguns and long guns. I'm going to summarize some laws specific to long guns because they tend to be the more lenient, right? The states tend to be more likely to allow minors to be in possession of long guns than they are handguns. And so this might give you some, you know, kind of worst case scenarios across the board, but you should assume that handguns are even worse. So here's the research I did, and I did this a bit in haste, so I assume it's 100% accurate, but you know, maybe I'm off in a couple of these states. But I mean, the vast majority of states don't have a minimum age for long gun possession. You know, even states you would actually even be surprised at, but you know, California, Alaska, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Texas, Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, Rhode Island.
It'd probably be easier to give the list of the ones that have a restriction.
I'm almost done. Maine, Virginia, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. So they have no restriction
now, on long guns.
On long guns. And, now, and they might with handguns.
There's not something in there that says like that it's assuming that they're, you know, under the supervision of a parent or something.
It could. Okay. That's going to vary from state to state. So, but just as far as having, these are states that have no outright ban on the possession, you know, by a minor of a long gun. Now the next kind of most popular trend is, okay, you have to be 18 or older to be in possession of a long gun. So, you know, these are states where you're at age 18, you can be touching the long gun. You know, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, your home state, Nevada, Utah, Oklahoma, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Florida.
Okay. So
Hawaii.
I got to jump in though. And I'm kind of like freaking out a little bit, wanting to pull my hair out or poke my eyes out or something. Because like you're saying, if I understood you correctly, that a 17-year-old just touching a centerfire, you know, long rifle in Idaho would be like just touching it is no exceptions is against the law. Or, I mean, come on. I went hunting how is that even possible? So I guess my point is like, there's gotta be a definition for the term possession, right? I mean, how does a 12-year-old go hunting if they can't even touch a rifle?
So I'm pulling up the actual Idaho law for you right now.
Okay.
Because I know you know we just gotta put this one to rest. Gotta know. Okay, here it is.
I mean, that's a pretty strong statement that I've broken the law apparently, because this summer I was back in Idaho and I allowed my at the time, 9-year-old son to touch and fire, of course, under my direct supervision, a Kel-Tec Sub 2000 9mm carbine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like freaking out, thinking, "Geez, Jacob, did I break the law?" And I'm willing to call BS on that. I don't think I broke the law.
All right, Idaho Chapter 18, 3302, Paragraph E. Here we go. Pulling it up for you. All right. Possession of a weapon by a minor, it shall be unlawful for any person under the age of 18 years to possess or have in possession any weapon as defined in Section 18.3302A, Idaho Code, unless he, now so you have some exceptions here. A, has the written permission of his parent or guardian to possess the weapon.
That's interesting. It actually says written.
Yeah. Continue. Or B, is accompanied by his parent or guardian while he has the weapon in his possession. 2, any minor under the age of 12 years in possession of a weapon shall be accompanied by an adult. So written possession is not good enough if you're 12 or younger. So,
yeah.
And 3, any person who violates the provisions of this section is guilty of a misdemeanor. So
I knew there had to be something like that in there. And yeah, I'll bet you almost all...
I think that's
all,
the case of most of these.
I'd be willing to bet that almost all of the states that you mentioned, actually all the states, have some sort of exception. Like it would be unreasonable to make the assumption that mere touching of a gun would be, you know, a violation of the law. But, you know, because in most cases, you're going to want to have a parent.
The point is that there's something regulated in these states, right? They're saying that, hey, something has to be a place. Whereas like my home state of Wyoming, there's zero regulation. Like as far as the law is concerned, there's nothing that would make it illegal for a 10-year-old to pick up a rifle and head out in the backwoods and start shooting crap.
Mm. Not even in federal law?
No.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, started shooting crap could cross a line, but you know that was a little broad. But yeah, there's some differences there. Now, and there's some other states are different, like Montana, 14. So once you're 14 in Montana, there's no regulation. In Minnesota and New York, 16. Once you're 16, there's no regulation. Illinois is an interesting one. You have to be 21 for there to not be any regulation. So when we say it's illegal for long gun possession, and we're talking about these different states like Idaho, you know, this was a great example. We're not saying that, you know, it can't be done legally. We're saying that there's regulation up until this age.
Okay, that's a good clarification, and I'm glad we got that figured out. Because, and it's interesting because what you are correct in saying that there's quite a few states where, you know, it would be you know, entirely appropriate and plausible for a parent to buy and then gift a, we're specifically talking about long guns right now, to a minor child, based in certain circumstances. I guess in like an Idaho, for instance, it seems to me that as long as I bought the gun for my, you know, somewhere between 12 and 18 year old child and gave them a written document that says they have my permission to have it, then we'd be okay.
Yeah, then they could be in possession anytime, even if you're not there. Without the written document, let me clarify. You said between 12 and 18, right?
Yes.
Yes, between 12 and 18, with a written document, you don't have to be present.
Right.
Without the written document, you have to be present as a legal guardian.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So check the point here is we obviously know that for every state, there's differences and nuances in law. And you're all going to want to check your local laws. And it's really not that hard to do, is it, Jacob? You just looked up the law in Idaho, and I'm guessing you used trusty old Google.
Yeah, I mean, you probably want to find a source that's going to give you the laws, you know, that can give it to you straight. But I mean, it's the funny thing about laws is it's actually very difficult sometimes to Google laws because of how much money attorneys make. To really make a long story short.
Sure, no.
But yeah, there are sources out there. And certainly email us, like say, hey, I'm worried about minors in wherever you live, Alaska, and I'll find it for you. I'll send it to you. Like, I am not so busy that I can't respond to an email from a podcast listener wondering about the law, what the laws are for minors in their state.
Yeah, right on, right on. You know, you're right. Sometimes it is challenging to find, you know, to be able to just like Google, you know, firearm law in Colorado or something. Because sometimes you'll get so many different results that are not the result you're looking for, or they're sources that aren't necessarily what I would consider credible. What I would consider credible when I'm researching and looking up laws is an officially owned and operated or sanctioned website, you know, that by that state's government. You know what I mean? And most states, I would say, in this day and age, make an attempt at least to, you know, make their state laws available somewhere online at no cost, because it should be available at no cost. Heck, it's state law, you know, but it is sometimes a little bit challenging to find, you know, but you may have to do some navigation, but like you could go to idaho.gov, for instance, just using Idaho as an example, and somewhere on there, and it might take a little while of looking through things, you should be able to find something where you can work your way through a bunch of menus and find your way to a page somewhere that has the statutes posted for people to be able to read and see. So anyway, that was my point. It was like, you know, you're going to want to check your local laws, and you're welcome to contact us. We'll do everything we can to help you with that. But you might also go out there and do some of your own searching, and you should be able to find it. You just might have to do a little bit of digging. And sometimes the verbiage isn't the easiest to understand. But what you just read, Jacob, you know, seemed completely, you know, understandable to me. You know, kind of plain as dirt sort of thing. So,
yep.
Anyway,
fair summary.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got here. What about, you know, so you've decided you've purchased a gun, and this would be true even if you're just, you know, wanting to ship a gun for any reason. Like you could be shipping it to yourself. I know people that go to Alaska, you know, but they want to drive up the highway, you know, and they got to go through Canada, and so they can't take their handguns or something with them. You know, and they'll leave, say, Seattle or something, and go to the FedEx or post office or someplace, and, you know, and ship their gun to themselves in Anchorage or wherever it is they're going to, right? But also, you might buy a gun and want to gift it to somebody, and maybe that somebody's in a different state. Now, that could get a little interesting, because in general, interstate transfers of weapons should be handled by a dealer. You know, now there may be some exceptions out there, but federal law definitely touches on this, because that does fall under the purview of federal law. You know, since federal law in the Constitution regulates interstate commerce. And so you want to be really careful with actually shipping, you know, something to somebody else, and it's transferring ownership. You see what I'm getting at? So what are your thoughts on this, Jacob?
Yeah, so I mean, this is regulated by Title 18, Chapter 44, Title 26, and Chapter 53 of the United States Code. And so, at the end of the day, like there's actual regulation relative to the shipping of firearms, and it's just one of those things you got to be careful about. It's universally true that a person cannot buy a handgun across state lines. You and I live in Colorado. We need to buy our handguns in Colorado, mm-hmm. or receive them from dealers in Colorado. And so that's something to be considered. Long guns may be different from state to state. However, when it comes to shipping, if I'm going to buy a gun and ship it to my brother who lives in Arizona as a gift, there's some things that definitely have to be careful about. The first thing I'll just make really clear, USPS will not ship a gun. So you're not using the United States Postal Service to do this. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And then UPS and FedEx, while they will ship guns, they are very sensitive about being within the definitions of the U.S. Code, Title 18, Chapter 44, and Title 26, Chapter 53. And essentially, if you really want me to break it down for you, what that law says is that dealers have to be involved. Like a dealer can ship to an individual can ship to a dealer, and two dealers can ship to each other, but two individuals may not. So I cannot, unless I'm a dealer, I cannot ship to my brother unless he is a dealer. Like one of us needs to be a dealer in order for that shipment to take place legally.
Yeah. Now, this is I'm pulling this straight off of ATF's website. So it's like an FAQ page on their site, and it says this: may a non-licensee ship a firearm through the U.S. Postal Service? And so we brought that up, and you said no, but this is interesting. It says a non-licensee may not transfer a firearm to a non-licensed resident of another state. So that's quite clear. Okay, and this is keeping in mind in the context of U.S. Postal Service. A non-licensee may mail a shotgun or rifle to a resident of his or her own state, or to a licensee, which would be a dealer, in any state. The Postal Service recommends that long guns be sent by registered mail and that no marking of any kind, which would indicate the nature of the contents, be placed on the outside of the parcel containing firearms. Handguns are not mailable. A common carrier or contract carrier must be used to ship a handgun.
Oh, good point of clarification there. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, and it's interesting here because at least with long guns, you know, a non-licensed individual, so a non-dealer, you or I, can mail long guns to anybody within our own state, because keep in mind, we're not crossing state lines in that case. But in the case of going across state, we can only mail to a dealer in another state. Yeah, that's even with long guns. And this is true, by the way. This actually is addressing specifically to U.S. Postal Service. It's actually very much true in general, I believe, with common carrier for the most part. But anyway, the one thing that is very clear is that handguns, which should be probably shipped to a dealer, need to go through a common carrier like UPS or FedEx. And I believe UPS and FedEx on handguns require those to be next day service, even because basically they don't want that on their hands, you know, very long. They want it. They want those transferred through their service as quickly as possible. Too much liability, I would presume.
Yeah, on the UPS website it says, let's see here. Will be accepted for transportation only via UPS Next Day Air services, specifically UPS Next Day Air, early UPS Next Day Air, and UPS Next Day Air Saver. Note, UPS Express Critical Service is not available for firearms. Mm.
Yeah, those services aren't cheap, next day. So that's why when you buy these handguns and things through Gunbroker or someplace, shipping is always, it's like, I think the cheapest I hardly ever see is maybe $30, but oftentimes it's, 45 or 50 or 60 because it's not cheap because they do require it to be next day. So, I would say as a general rule, just because I would be afraid of like crossing a line somewhere, that I am not inclined to ship a firearm, even if I'm gifting it to somebody in another state, just period. Unless it's going to be shipped to a dealer that they can go to and pick it up. Would that be prudent or reasonable? Or
I don't think I'm opposed. I agree. I mean, frankly, you really want my 2 cents? Like, buy a gift card to the gun store. Call it a day.
Ooh, I like
you
it.
Know? Like, I know maybe we're not done exhausting this topic, but if you want to give a gun as a gift, and we've really only talked at this point so far, and I realize it's probably going to take up the majority of the podcast about the legal concerns, because that's probably what you guys care about the most. But at the end of the day, you know, it might just be easier. Just like, here's a gift card to Cabela's. Like, peace out. I want you to go buy a gun. That's what this gift card is for. Go make it happen.
I like that answer. That really does make it easy on everybody involved. You don't have to run the risk of breaking the law accidentally or doing something wrong. You know, gift cards, that works really, really great.
Yeah.
So anyway, we hope that what we've discussed about today is helpful for many of you as we get closer to the, you know, Christmas and holiday season, and you're out there shopping, and, you know, maybe some of these were things that that came up in your mind and you were wondering about. So we hope it was a help to you. Is there anything that we failed to just completely, you know, cover, Jacob?
Well, I think outside of the legal things, I think there's just some other thoughts I would have for you if you're trying to buy a gun for somebody. You know, a gun is obviously a very individual selection kind of thing. It's very hard to know what gun is right for someone else. So I would encourage you to try and create opportunities. You know, maybe you invite a bunch of friends and the person you intend to give the gift to, and you all go shooting together, and you can observe that person, all the different guns that they try and shoot, and kind of get a sense for what they're liking. That might be a way you can get some sense for what the best gun is for that person. Also, I'll add, if you're going to buy someone a gun, it's like buying someone, like, buying my kid toys without giving them batteries. Like, if you're going to buy someone a gun, you also give them some ammo and probably a decent little case to put it in. So those are some other things I would encourage you to think about, the accessories. And maybe you want to just buy them accessories. Maybe someone already has a gun. You just want to buy them. I mean, you can send me ammo. I can tell you that right now. Like, that's a great gift for Jacob.
Yeah. You know, and that's a good point. I like that you mentioned. I mean, what about the actual idea of buying a gun and gifting to somebody else? You know, that is challenging. I mean, I'll tell you what, you can buy me any gun you want and I will happily accept any gun you buy for me. But, you know, you sometimes run into this where a husband or boyfriend or somebody is like, you know, I want to buy and gift, you know, a gun for my wife. You know, I want to buy a gun for my wife, and they want to surprise her or something. And, you know, I would probably discourage you a little bit from doing that, because honestly, I think she'd probably appreciate it a heck of a lot more if you went with her to the store and picked it out with her. You know what I mean? And so, you know, like you said a moment ago, Jacob, you know, buy a gift card, maybe even specific to a certain gun store, to Cabela's or whatever, and put that in the stocking or put it under the tree together with a note and say, hey, I love you, babe, and like, let's go gun shopping together, you know? Or, you know,
yeah, make it a nice package, include some range time and some ammo, or, I mean, yeah. You know, safety gear. I mean, you can really, and there's a lot of things that go with being a gun owner, as all of our listeners know. So it can be more than the gun, too. You could really round that out and make it a nice package.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, some good things to think about and consider. So we really do hope you all have a wonderful holiday season. But we're kind of running short on time now. And so let's move on to first, well, our episode sponsor today, which is, you mentioned a moment ago, Jacob, you know, consider getting him a nice case or something for that gift. And so today's episode is brought to you by the MTM 13-inch handgun case. Speaking of gifts, this year, make sure your favorite someone has one of our handgun cases. Our most popular case is well padded and can be double padlocked. It's a secure and protected way to transport one or two handguns. And you can go find them on our store, in our online store at usafirearmtraining.com. And in the show notes will be the direct link to the 13-inch MTM handgun case. Go check it out. They're not very expensive, but they do a really great job of transporting and securing and packaging your handguns. So we hope you'll find some value in that. On to now, picks of the week. Jacob, what's yours?
So this week, my pick is a whiteboard. I know that's kind of generic and doesn't sound particularly like an actual pick, but I think everybody should own whiteboards. I know that it probably is not true that not everybody is has the same brain deficiencies that Jacob has, but I can't survive without a whiteboard. I remember the last like real job I had on my second day of work, I walked into HR and I was like, I need a whiteboard. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, you have one. I was like, it's 2 feet wide. They're like, well, what do you want? 6 feet wide. And eventually I convinced that employer to just paint my walls with whiteboard paint. I can't live without whiteboards. I don't know how other people do it. You just need a whiteboard so you can write stuff that's in your brain and map stuff out and, you know, just do it. Just get a whiteboard.
Yeah. And I remember back when we had our office for the business, actually in a legit office building. And now we just operate out of your home. I remember like one of the first things you had to accomplish was getting this massive whiteboard in there, you know, because I've got two whiteboards, but they're those little 2 foot ones that you despise.
Those are worthless.
Anyway, Jacob loves his whiteboards. All right, my pick this week is not gun-related, but definitely should help you stay warm during this colder weather, and that is the Rigid 18-volt lithium-ion heated camo jacket. Go check out the link. Rigid is the brand. Rigid, as many of you probably know, make power tools. And having a background in construction, I had a lot of these Rigid, you know, drills and other cordless tools and a ton of these 18 volt batteries that go with those. And my wife surprised me last Christmas with this very thing, with this Rigid 18 volt heated jacket. And so you take one of these standard 18 volt batteries, and there's a pocket that it goes in, and you plug it in and you turn it on, and it's got heating elements in the jacket itself, and also separate heating elements I noticed in the pockets where your hands would go. And so you can have those turned on individually if you want, or not at all. And it's amazing how warm this thing gets. It's got three different levels: hot, high, medium, and low. And half the time I can't use it on anything more than the low setting, because it just gets too warm. So I don't know how much they're still making or selling these, but I did see that there was a few places you can still buy them online. And I know there's other makers that make similar products, but I really enjoy mine, and it's done me very well for this last winter. And then this week we finally got another cold snap here in Colorado, and I pulled out the old heated jacket, and oh, so welcome. Up next, Jacob, what do you got coming up for you?
Well, my wife got this idea, I don't know, probably off some website or Pinterest or something, but she got this idea that this year for Christmas, as a family, we should have a homemade Christmas, meaning that all gifts exchanged in our immediate family would be homemade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that sounds really hard to me. So, but regardless, I've committed, and so I got to start making some gifts, man.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's... That definitely sounds like it's right up your alley.
Right. Yeah, that's sarcasm spewing out of Riley, if anyone didn't know.
But I know you're going to come up with something, and I will expect that at some point I will get a phone call or message from you where you'll be like, look what I made, Riley. Aren't you so proud of me?
It'll probably be before that. You'll get a phone call from me, and I'll be at Home Depot saying, Riley, what the crap do I buy? That phone call's come more than once.
Nice. My up next is something, frankly, I'm very excited for. I can't take a whole lot of credit for it because, I mean, other than I paid for it, but it's my wife that really planned this. And because I'm pretty sure my kids aren't listening to the podcast, I'm okay with mentioning this on air. But this, I mention it because some of you might be interested in doing something like this because it's fetching cool. And that is, tomorrow we are going to go ride the Polar Express. Now, I know there's a few places that say they're going to, you know, that they have a Polar Express ride, or they do this or they do that. This is like the legit, like, Polar Express. I mean, so in Durango, Colorado, they have a railway line that goes from Durango to Silverton. And it's a really beautiful, crazy ride on a train. I mean, just you're looking down, you know, like... 1,000-foot drops or, you know, whatnot, just basically going up this canyon, right? And so every holiday season, they do a special Polar Express experience. And you take the kids and you go on the train ride, and they do it, you know, they serve the hot chocolate, and, you know, you see Santa Claus and all that stuff. I mean, it's really, of course, geared to the kids, but it's a beautiful train, a beautiful railway line, and should be a really great experience. And we haven't said anything to the kids. They're going to get woken up early in the morning. We're going to hit the road, and, you know, we won't tell them what we're doing or where we're going. So
it sounds pretty cool.
Anyway, that's our up next, and really looking forward to it. So, Jacob, I hope you have a good rest of your day. And actually, we're pre-recording this. And Jacob, you're going out of town a little bit as well. And I hope that goes well for you. Just a reminder, folks, if you haven't already done so, I would encourage you to go and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on anything. We've got some really great things planned. And just this past Monday, we actually had Kyle Lamb on, which if you missed that episode, you really, really, really missed out. So go back and check out episode 77. And Jacob, I believe you've got a feedback that somebody's left for us on iTunes. So why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to pronounce this dude's username. I say dude because it ends in guy, but it's UDFREYGUY. So I think it's Udfrey guy. Udfrey guy? Udfrey. Udfrey. Udfrey guy.
Okay. Yep. I like it.
Yeah, Udfrey guy. The title of his review is Exactly What I Needed. And he says, I've been into long guns and hunting for most of my life, but handguns and CCW is all new to me. This podcast is exactly what I needed. I love that the episodes cover a large variety of info that applies to CCW world. I learn from the reviews and training tips, and the real-life stories give me examples to help determine how I would apply myself in a real-life situation. The guys add a good bit of entertainment, and the quality of the recordings are great. I highly recommend this one.
Awesome.
Thanks, Udfrey guy.
Yeah, seriously, thank you. I really appreciate you for being a loyal listener, Udfrey guy. Work on that username, man. Come on. Can I just do, you know, will you grant me just a little leeway here, Jacob? I got to get something out. And that's something.
I can't grant the leeway unless I knew what it is. I guess you tricked me into that one. I have to say yes.
Well, I'm the host of the podcast. I get to do whatever I want, right?
I guess so.
But, you know, create the illusion that you have input. Anyway. So, what I wanted to say was that, this guy, Udfrey guy, mentioned how he appreciates the real life stories and stuff. Folks, you don't want to miss next week's episode. All right, episode 80. We have somebody that'll be on the podcast interviewed that had to use deadly force to defend their life and the life of someone else. It'll really open your eyes. So definitely stop in and make sure you do not miss that episode, along with Kyle Lamb's episode from Monday, episode 77. So there you go. That's all I wanted to get out there, Jacob. I hope that was all right.
Acceptable.
Okay. All right, folks. Take care. Have a great day. We'll see you later.
Reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.